Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Breitall. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review.
This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 220 for comics originally released on October 26, 2011. Now, starting us off in DC is Legion of Superheroes Secret Origin, or is it technically just Legion Secret Origin, number one?
You know, it's... check the...
It's Legion Secret Origin, oh, number one.
I guess
one.
It just says Legion Secret Origin.
They had solicited it one way, it came out the other. Not that big of a difference, but hey, you know, I like to get these things right.
I like this. I thought, though, this should have been Legion of Superheroes number one.
You know, I had thought about that, but I think you're entirely right. Because I was coming at this thinking, you know, it's a really good thing I enjoy the Legion of Superheroes a lot. Because I've kind of lost track of how many times I've read the quote-unquote real origin of the Legion. And you're right, this would have been a better way to kick off that series. It may have made it a little bit of a slower start or whatever, but it would have made people think they were really getting in on the ground floor.
I mean, the thing that I heard from various people that ended up not liking the Legion series because they weren't big Legion, you know, they didn't know a lot about the Legion, was that, you know, they picked it up and read it and it was kind of confusing. I mean, they couldn't follow because it seemed to kind of jump in pretty quick. And that's Steven, you know, said my son Steven, he said the same thing, you know, he just kind of couldn't follow it, didn't know what was going on. So, you know, even though they were saying it was a relaunch, not a reboot, you know, I think we all know now after having read 2 months of this stuff, it was a reboot, in my opinion. It too much stuff changed for it to be called a, you know, simple relaunch. And I think it would have been appropriate to have this series, you know, be the Legion series.
Well, whether you call it a reboot or a relaunch, and I agree with you, just the backstory having the, you know, Heroes only been around for 5 years or whatever, is a de facto reboot, whether they want to claim it's just a relaunch and renumbering because storylines kind of, sort of, but not quite carried over. You're doing new number ones for everything, so you want it to have a very clear jumping on point. And you're right, the Legion of Superheroes title, as much as I enjoyed it, was very much picking up in the middle. Whereas this, they did a really good job of making it feel like you're coming at the beginning. And it's funny because I don't know how many times you've read the Origin of the Legion, but I've read it a couple of different times, a couple of different ways.
Yeah, they change it slightly here and there. I mean, it's basically the same.
Yeah, I don't think they've ever radically changed the origin that much. What I liked here was the twist isn't in what happened, but in who we're watching. The fact that we're following an Earthling, I guess Mycroft or whatever, Kaluan, this Zarl Jax, and a Nultorian, Anasa, who appear to be like some kind of special think tank or whatever for the United Planets, and how they're watching the events that we've seen before, but other readers may not have, and are still shown here. So we see Lightning Lad, Saturn Girl, Cosmic Boy, but at a distance and kind of interpret it for us, but we see really that bigger picture of what's going on for the entire Legion of, or, you know, the entire United Planets as the Legion is forming. It gives it a very different kind of a spin, a different feel, while still keeping the facts pretty much rock solid and exactly how they were before. And I liked how we got kind of up close and personal with Brainiac 5 and Phantom Girl, who are future Legionnaires as of when this story is, but obviously long since, as far as we're concerned. It was a nice approach to take to something to where it wasn't just the same old, and also wasn't a, gee, we've got to change things up because we've told the story a few times.
I also like Chris Bautista's art. Very clean, very clear.
I was really pleased with it, yeah. What I liked is he seemed to have a sense of acting to it, if you know what I mean. I mean, the characters reacted. They had personalities. To me, this was a step above some of the other comics I've been reading lately in terms of the art.
Yeah, it was really good. I enjoyed it quite a lot. He had good storytelling, good clean line work, and, you know, the different people in their faces, they looked different. I mean, mm-hmm. they don't look like it's just the same generic face. And on the page, I guess where the Legion's getting off the spaceship with RJ Brand.
Yeah.
And that little at the bottom of the page where they're using their powers to save RJ Brand, they've got the three kind of insets with Cosmic Boy, Saturn Girl, and Lightning Lad.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of updated, but they have that very distinct classic look where, I mean, they just identifiably, without like costume really in there, you know, you could tell who they are.
And that's, well, you know. They're doing the old Power Ranger trick of, okay, the Red Ranger's got to wear like a red shirt, well, the blue one's going to have a blue, you know.
And she's got her little necklace with the Saturn on it and stuff. I mean.
Yeah, it's iconically so for the color scheme, et cetera, that it fits who the characters are, and it's kind of that shorthand that works. But you're right, it was done in a very subtle way, and it felt natural. It didn't feel like, oh, geez, they're trying to, you know, put Clark Kent in the red shirt or the red jacket over the blue shirt to kind of mimic the cape and stuff and all that stuff. What I liked with that page, though, is how between those inset panels we get the close-ups of those people in the think tank, and they're sort of narrating the events, but more reacting to them, and it's really two levels of story going on here. And I liked how, you know, the sparse use of the background when we've got the think tank people, the equivalent of the TV screen, like you said, for when we're seeing what's happening with the Legionnaires. You know, it was very clear that we've got those two levels going on. What's, you know, it wasn't confusing at all. It was, again, a nice clean style to it, both artistically and storytelling-wise. Obviously, some of that came out of Levitt's script. Some of that, I think, was the art team themselves. But I was really pleased with how all of that worked.
The other thing, you know, and this was a point of complaint for me on some series, is, you know, you got enough backgrounds in this. It's not like every single panel has got, you know, fully detailed backgrounds, but there are enough backgrounds and enough panels on each page that have some decent background material in them that it gives the series a sense of place, and it looks like, you know, the time and place that it's supposed to look like. And that was something that in some of the it seemed rushed in some of the other relaunch books with the lack of background detail in some of them.
Well, yeah, certainly I think Batwing was one that we really noticed that on. And it's not just the rushed aspect, but the free-floating, I can't get anchored into this world. Whereas here, we go from a number of different settings, a couple of different planets, and you're right, they've got that firm background, that firm sense of we're somewhere. And there are a couple of places, like when we see Brainiac 5 looking around we get that one close-up on that device after he's been walking on the planet and stuff. And in that one panel, we don't have a background, but it's very much to direct our attention. Brainiac 5 has found that little device. He's going to go play with it now. You know, and then we get back to where we have those backgrounds and that stuff. And it's something where we have the lack of clutter where we need the attention focused, and we have the sense of reality, the sense of we're not just free-floating in you know, a nameless space or whatever for the rest of the time. I mean, it's one of those things where a lot of artists cut corners, it seems like. It's like, well, we know they're in a room, so I don't need to draw anything. And yeah, technically sometimes you don't, but you do that enough, and it's like you lose sight of, oh yeah, we're still in that room, aren't we? Yeah. I was pleased, because there's also a couple of panels where we get rubble and stuff like that, and it's almost a Perez level of detail in some of those, but not in a cluttered sense. I would like to see more comics with this level of art.
Yeah. Very well done.
Yeah. I mean, for me, this was a very solid 4 out of 5. For what I was expecting to be more of a just going through the paces of an origin I'd read before, they found a new way to tell the same story, and a very pleasing art team to do it with. So I was very happy.
Yeah, I was too. Same, very, very high 4 out of 5.
Cool.
Move on to the new, or the newest Incredible Hulk number 1. How long before they revert this to the original numbering? Is there a betting pool?
It's funny you mention that, because one of the first notes I put down on this is that, now, frankly, by the time this arrived, I wasn't all that excited by yet another Hulk number 1. You know, and it's like, how many times? Oh, we'll relaunch it again. What's the big deal? It's like, come on, just tell stories for a while. And no, I'm not going to put in a betting pool on this because it's a losing bet either way. If this makes it past issue 50 before either renumbering back to the old numbering or to a new number one or something, I will be shocked. For that matter, if it makes it past 25, I might be rather surprised. The part that got me was when we read and talked about Fear Itself number 7 last week, the epilogue with the Hulk and with Banner actually got me excited about this. I was saying, wow, you know, I'm looking forward to this.
I didn't see the through line.
Neither did I. I was really disappointed by this. It's like, clearly some time has passed since those events. The Hulk has apparently taken over part of the Mole Man's underground empire, or at least a village of related, you know, underlings or whatever. The whole bit with Banner wasn't even touched on until
Banner
the end.
Is, you know, like some kind of island of Dr. Moreau thing going on. And, you know, as a first issue, I thought it was really weak. It, in and of itself, it does not explain how you got there or why you should care. And it's certainly, when you have a prologue to this in the last issue of the big event book that, you know, I'm sure more people are going to have bought Fear Itself than will buy Incredible Hulk. At least that's how it usually goes. Maybe not.
Almost certainly, though. You know, I mean, but safe bet.
You know, you're theoretically setting this book up there and having no story thread that carries through is just a mistake in my mind.
I completely agree with that. And it's one of many mistakes they made. The other one was how they solicited this book. And the solicitation was Marvel architect Jason Aaron joins forces with legendary artist Mark Silvestri to Classified. And I mean, that right there, it's hard to get excited about Classified.
Well, you know, they kind of delivered, didn't they?
Well,
I don't know what
the
happened.
The plot certainly still seems classified. I will grant you that.
I read this whole thing, and I don't know what I was reading. Maybe I'm...
I thought the Hulk part...
I kind of went back. I mean, I obviously know what was going on. I mean, he was sitting in, you know, some underground Mole Man realm. He's, like, killing stuff. He's somehow the Moloids have kind of adopted him in the tribe. He's sort of reticent. These people from some kind of organization, I forget if they mentioned it or not, you know, some S.H.I.E.L.D.-ish organization come down to get him, and then they cut to the weird, you know, Dr. Moreau kind of thing with Banner. But okay, I got that. I don't know why.
Exactly. It lacked context.
You know, yeah. It just...
Well, the part that gets me is it was unclear how much time has elapsed since what we read in Fear Itself number 7. There's a reference to many quakes of the Earth have happened since the Hulk got to this underground realm. I don't know how to translate that into days, weeks, months, years, or whatever. But clearly, a significant amount of time has passed for him to have befriended all of these guys. The minute we cut to the Island of Dr. Moreau stuff with 26 and 27, I mean, those two were just annoying. And that went on too long before it really paid off of, oh, it's Banner and stuff, and why he's suddenly gone completely nuts or whatever. Like you said, it didn't make any sense compared to what we had seen in Fear Itself, and more people are going to be reading that expecting this to kind of spin out of that.
I guess the theory is that you're setting up this mystery that people are going to want to follow along, and you know, I think that there will be people that want to do that. I mean, I'm not one of those people, but you know, it certainly there will be. Personally, I think the people who are really going to enjoy this book are people who are big fans of Mark Silvestri's art. I mean, I'm okay with Mark Silvestri's art. Mark Silvestri on the Hulk does nothing for me. I mean, the Hulk looks relatively off model. You know, it's a Silvestri Hulk. So, I mean, that's what you're kind of expecting. It's just the shoulders. He's got kind of like a the way that his shoulders kind of taper down in almost like a V shape from his head.
Yeah.
Inside, not on the cover. He has a little squarer shoulders, although I don't know, those really bulgy, weird neck muscles on the cover are kind of strange too. But I mean, Hulk always had, you know, kind of football player, you know, broader shoulders. And, you know, he just kind of looks pinheaded and stuff here. It's just weird. It didn't appeal to me, but I'm sure there are people who will like it. And then those people who are going to read this because they like Mark Silvestri, well, he's not even going to be on the book past issue 3. Wills Portasio's taking over with issue 4.
Yeah. So those people are quite possibly going to be disappointed in, you know, a few issues' time.
I don't understand why you bring a big, high-profile artist on and make that a big thrust of your marketing campaign when, I mean, they should probably know better. I would imagine that they're not going to keep him around. I mean, you want to put out a 3-issue series with Mark Silvestri, go put out a 3-issue series with Mark Silvestri and make it a mini or something.
Yeah. It seems high risk doing it, not just with a high profile artist, but one particularly so tied to another company and stuff. Because, I mean, he is the guy behind Top Cow, isn't he?
Yeah, at least one of them.
Yeah. So if he's got to pick which deadline he's going to make, you know, it may not always be that Marvel one despite the paycheck.
I mean, I don't know that he's really drawing anything over there, but I would imagine he's got other business obligations that he's got to take care of.
Yeah. I guess for me, this issue really didn't live up to my hopes and stuff. But, you know, frankly, few issues do. I have high expectations, I guess. And no doubt some of the stuff is going to get explained more in future issues as to what's going on with Banner's status quo, how did the Hulk get where he's at, and what's going on. You know, that's great, but as far as this issue goes, what it had was okay. It just didn't have enough in it for me. It should have, like you said, it should have been a stronger start. It should have been something where all of us were coming out of this thinking, wow, I can't wait to read the next issue. And you're right. There are no doubt going to be some people who are that way. This is a 5 out of 5 for them, and that's fine. But, you know, from my perspective, that's cool. But I, to a certain degree, I just don't care. It's how is it for me? And for me, this was just, frankly, another run-of-the-mill comic. You know, it told part of a story. It didn't really seem to get the story going. I'm not entirely sure, you know, other than it seems they're going to pit the Hulk against Banner and Banner against the Hulk, which, frankly, has been kind of a central theme throughout the Hulk forever. This time they're in different bodies, I guess, is the big twist. That's the only central theme to this series I can see. And even that is just something's got to be done about Banner.
Well,
wow, that's it?
Just an opinion again on my part, but it seems to me like that's your big point of conflict, is that you've got Banner and Hulk in separate bodies. Instead of playing this out as, you know, who only knows when they're going to explain how they got separated, since it's the point of conflict, why does that need to be a point of mystery? Why don't you just tell the story of how they got separated and then play off the suspense of, you know, their conflict with one another. And you can actually put maybe, in my opinion, more into that conflict because you're not trying to obfuscate, you know, how they got separated because it's the mystery.
Yeah. Well, the other mystery for me here comes in with Banner. Specifically, I mean, I know he's always been a smart guy. He was a rocket scientist quite literally from the day we met him. But when did he become this biogenetic genius? Where he is taking, warthogs or whatever and making them stronger, faster, and smarter. When did he get this ability? I mean, science seems to be kind of in the Marvel Universe. If you're good at one, you're good at all.
That's exactly correct. I mean, in Marvel, if you're a smart scientist guy, you just seem to have this generic knowledge of all branches of science, especially really weird, different, specific ones. I don't know exactly how that works, but, you know, hey, they're super, you know?
Well, you know, it's funny because Hank McCoy, the Beast, started out being this biogenetic and, you know, genius or whatever, but now he's suddenly just can do computers, do all this stuff. Hank Pym, you know, Ant-Man, Giant-Man, Goliath, Wasp, Yellowjacket, and I forget what other names he's gone under. You know, he's a AI expert. He built Ultron. He's a robotics expert. He's got also the biogenetic stuff, too. It's like, I don't know, it's just crazy. This seemed like a...
At least, I will say, Hank Pym is like the scientist supreme of the Marvel Universe, so they, you know...
Fair enough, I will grant him that.
Something going on there, you know? that's just like every smart guy in the Marvel Universe is a master of all branches of, you know, every disparate branch of science, that it just seems like these are all things that are equally unknown to the people writing these stories. So it's just like, oh, it's a bunch of weird, complicated stuff. So smart guys know it.
If I felt that somehow Banner was using gamma radiation to mutate these animals or something, I'd be okay with that. It seemed completely out of left field.
And maybe he is, but you know, that's a good point. If that's what he is doing, then that should have been a story point that they made clear here.
But that wouldn't really explain the brain in the jar on one of those panels near the end there.
I think that's just because it's cool looking. Because what scientist, you know, that's like, you know, when you're buying your mad scientist laboratory stuff,
you just don't get
brain in the
brains.
Jar.
It's got to be jarred.
A Tesla coil, you know, there are like standard things that you need to have in your lab.
Yeah, I guess. I would have liked to have seen something a little bit more sensical, I guess would be the way to put it on this. I mean, part of it is I'm a bit jaded from the continual relaunches over at Marvel. This is not the first Hulk number one I've read, and not even the first one I've read in the last few years, if you count the Red Hulk one, too. Some people are going to love this. For me, it was okay, and I don't think it was Aaron's best writing. I don't think it was Silvestri's best work. Obviously, you know, everyone's going to have a different opinion on that. That's cool. But for me, this was a 3 out of 5. It was essentially just another comic.
Yeah, I felt the same way. I mean, and for me, kind of like a low 3 out of 5.
Yeah. Let's put it this way. I'm getting enough comics these days where if I needed to start making some cuts in Marvel, based on this issue, this is a possibility.
And for me, I am not getting issue 2 of this.
You'd kind of already decided that once they switched artists, though.
Well, I mean, I was still going to, I had not ordered number 2, and I was going to let this issue stand on its own. I mean, if I would have really liked this, I would have at least gotten issues 2 and 3.
True.
You know, finish out Silvestri's story. I hope they at least just finish out a story in 3 parts and don't just switch artists in the middle of it, but maybe they will.
I'm going to go, they're going to switch artists in the middle of the arc.
Yeah. I am not a Wills Portacio art fan, and that certainly helped me along the way. And again, personal favorite, you know, or not.
Personal taste, totally.
Personal taste. I mean, I think he does fine work. You know, I don't have any, you know, personal animosity towards the guy. It's just his art does not appeal to me particularly. But I think other people love him, like most artists. They have a following, and that's great.
Well, I think we're pretty clear when we think an artist is just simply bad, and by which I mean we can point to specific places where they fundamentally fail to clearly convey the story they are trying to tell. And I think that's been fairly few and far between on all the stuff we've reviewed. There's one book I can think of where I think we both gave it either a 1 or possibly even a 0 rating. It was so atrocious. But, I mean, a lot of this, you know, I like certain art styles, you like certain art styles, and yeah, there are certain artists that, for whatever reason, just don't click with us. And I don't see anything right or wrong with that, but I try to not let that, you know, unduly bias how I rate the book. I try to mix how I like it and did I think it was good, which is, you know, dicey thing sometimes.
Right, and, you know, for me, I don't dislike the art. You know, if the story would have been a little more coherent for me, where I could have really followed what was going on and really made me care and want to come back, then, you know, I would have been coming back.
Yeah.
The art, I was going to say, the art was not the hindrance here that was causing me to not pick up the next issue.
Right, but it also wasn't keeping you around for the next one either on and of itself. I can see that.
You know, because if I really loved the art, I mean, like if Frank Cho was drawing this, I would have probably said, I'd get the next, you know, I'd get the issues that Frank Cho is drawing.
If he's going to do a Hulk family book, I'd much rather it be a She-Hulk of some variant.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
I'm just pulling an artist out.
I know.
Like, you know, Art Adams, you know, there's a lot of artists that I'll buy pretty much anything that they do.
Well, the more you like the artist, the more slack you're willing to cut the writer and vice versa.
Right, exactly.
And that's cool.
So, anyway, it was, to me, it was a book that was kind of there.
Yeah. Shall we move on?
Sure. The long title.
Star Wars Crimson Empire 3, Empire Lost, Number 1, Subsection 4, Paragraph 8. It's like, come on. You know, this was something that I've been reading some Dark Horse Star Wars comics for ages, probably since they really, actually since they got the license, I think. Not all of them. For a while, I got all of them. Then I got a little burnt out, so I scaled back, and then I've been dipping my toe in. But I got all the Crimson Empire stuff. I have at least a drawer box full of nothing but Star Wars comics. What really surprised me in a crap, how come I'd never thought of that kind of a way, was when I opened this to the first page, and we get essentially the previously in the Star Wars universe, even though this is a first issue. And it was kind of on a Starfield background. It was in the yellow text. It was kind of not angled, but it was evocative of the opening paragraphs you would get in the movies.
Well, also, the little tiny blurb on the inside of the front cover where it is kind of, and then in addition to the, you know, I'm talking about the little one that says the New Republic era, you know, that kind of stuff. And then the Empire Lost, and they kind of explain. I mean, between all of that, I mean, because I read Crimson Empire 2. I don't even remember how long ago that was. I don't remember much about it. But they gave me enough information here that I was able to get into the story.
Yeah. Well, what I liked is not only do they do that, but particularly when you get to that first story page with that stuff, they do it in the style of Star Wars. And that was something that I hadn't seen done before. In hindsight, it seems like a perfectly obvious idea, and I'm sure it's been done before, but it almost makes the theme music start playing in your mind and stuff and pulls you into the universe pretty quickly. You know, so particularly given that some of the Crimson Empire stuff, I think, was maybe 5, 10, 15 years ago, being able to reset the scene, get us back into the universe so quickly and stuff, I thought was well done. And personally, I really enjoyed the opening scene with that big ship and kind of what happens to it and stuff. It was fun. It's like, oh, well, yeah, I see how that went.
What I liked about this, I mean, well, first off, Paul Galassi falls into the category of, I will buy anything Paul Galassi draws, regardless of, you know, how good the story is. So, you know, I was getting this even if the story was terrible. The story was okay. I'm not that big of a Star Wars in comics fan. What really helped me in this one was the fact that we have, you know, Luke and Leia. So it's, you know, following their story a little bit in the past, because, you know, for a while there, as they were going through with this litany of names that I don't know who any of these people are, and they're all kind of like very strange names, you know, my eyes were glazing over. And then when we got, you know, to Leia and her kids and, you know, talking, you know, Han Solo, this and that, and Star Wars, and I mean, not Luke Skywalker and all this kind of stuff, I warmed up to it a little bit more.
Well, I think part of it with this is you very much like your movie and TV properties as movie and TV properties. You rarely do tend to get the comic adaptations of that stuff. So the fact that you even got this is a bit of, I don't say against your nature, but it's a bit of an anomaly.
It's the Paul Galassi factor is exactly what it is. Totally. You know, if it was any other artist, or, well, not any, I mean, Art Adams could have been, you know, but if it wasn't on my list of people I'll buy anything that they draw, I wouldn't have been getting this.
Oh, totally, totally. But I think part of that goes to the point that there is the Star Wars universe as embodied by the 6 films. There's the slightly larger one that includes, you know, like the Clone Wars TV show and stuff like that. But then there's the whole expanded or extended universe, I forget what the official term is, that includes all the books, all the comics, all that kind of stuff, where they have done things like, yeah, you know, Boba Fett having died in the movies, he somehow managed to survive that, you know, and stuff.
I was wondering about that because, yeah, Boba Fett's running around in this, and I'm like, didn't he die in the Sarlacc pit?
They had filmed a scene where he, like, crawls out or something, but decided that would, you know, interfere with the movie, so that was left to the extended universe, and I'm sure there's probably at least one, if not two or three, explanations. Although, in fairness, the Lucasfilms company is pretty good about keeping the continuity, you know, in sync across the games, the TV shows, the comics, the books, the movies, you name it. It's surprisingly cohesive for how big that universe has become. And no doubt half of these characters are ones that somebody's going to recognize from somewhere, but for me it's just, hey, it's another alien. You know, I'm okay with that. I did like how we got Leia and Han's kids, who I got some familiarity from some of the books, you know, and got to see Luke. And you're right, I think it helped ground that story into the familiar from the movies versus just, you know, here's an Imperial Guardsman turned bounty hunter, you know, from the old Crimson Empire stories. Now, it's interesting that we never actually see him in his kind of signature uniform that he's got on the cover, you know, but, you know, no doubt we'll get that later on. What I did like is there was a good amount of story here in terms of getting caught up with where some of the main players are, jumping between a couple of different worlds and stuff, but the pacing felt right. It didn't feel rushed. It didn't feel padded. The story ended on a pretty solid reveal, setting up the next issue and stuff. And it's one of those things that, you know, I'm looking forward to the rest of the miniseries. They tend to have a good amount of story in these, and it feels roughly like the equivalent of a movie. Now, granted, it'd be nice to get it all at once, but if they're going to serialize it out, I'm okay with that too.
Right.
And I think this delivered pretty much what was promised in the solicit. You know, it got the story rolling, so I was happy with that.
No, I agree. It was well done. So this one I gave a 4 out of 5. I thought that, especially because some Star Wars comics that I've read have been, you know, and I picked up the occasional one here and there, they've been relatively impenetrable to the casual movie watcher. You know what I mean? It's like,
oh yeah,
they're so steeped in the comic or extended universe that, you know, I'm like, what the heck is going on kind of thing. And this one, there was a good blend of those two that I enjoyed it.
Yeah. They did a good job staying true to the tone and the style of the films. Both, you know, Galassi's art kind of lends itself to that too. There have been a few where I've read the comics and it didn't look or feel like a Star Wars thing.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, this was a strong 4 out of 5. I was very pleased with this.
Yeah, very well done.
Now, I think Dark Horse has done a great job with the license, and I hope they keep it for a while. They're doing enough, yet not like I felt they were at one point, of kind of oversaturating the market with just too much Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
So we are recording a little early this week, so I have not read much else. I have read two other things. I did read that Star Trek Legion. I got my copy this week. I think you got yours last week.
Yeah, I liked it. I got mine and read it last week. It was a good book.
I was really pleased with that. I think Jeff Moy did a really good job capturing the likenesses of the actors without it seeming like, you know, stills were taken and then drawn over like some artists tend to be. I found some artists, when they're doing actor likenesses, the art seems to get a little stiff, a little awkward. You only get faces in certain poses, but I felt Jeff did a great job on that. I'm really looking forward to the rest of that series. And then I read the last issue of Red Wing, which I liked, but really I need to read that all in one sitting to really understand the story.
Yeah, I have not read that one yet.
Like we talked about with the third issue, it's one that I think challenges the reader a bit more than the average comic, but I mean, I expect that from Jonathan Hickman.
Mm-hmm.
But then I've got a stack of literally 4 dozen other comics that came this week to go through. So I've got plenty of reading to be doing. That pretty much do it then?
I am set.
Cool.
Join us next week when we discuss Justice League International number 3 from DC, Villains for Hire number 0.1 from Marvel, and Seven Warriors number 1 from Boom Studios.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.